coming into that situation, like, I was like a McDonald's All-American. I was a top 10 player, but like, I always been like a team player, and I always knew in the back of my mind that when you win, good things always happens. And on every level, it always happens. Like in the NBA, when you win, majority of the guys on the team get paid.
When you Everybody lose, eats.
It goes crazy. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just not for the players. It's for everyone on staff. Like everyone from the front office to the coaching staff, the manager, everybody. You get taken care of when you win. When you lose, like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like some people, yeah, for sure going to get paid. Some people are going to have their jobs. Some people get taken care of. But a lot of people that get, you know, replaced and lost in the sauce.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Basketball Strong Podcast. I'm Tim DeFrancesco, former LA Lakers strength and conditioning coach and doctor of physical therapy, and I'm here with my co-host, Emmy-nominated writer and author, Phil White. This podcast is not just for basketball junkies. It's for anyone who loves to hear the human stories behind great people while learning the science behind preparing your body for the court and high performance. Today's guest is Ed Davis. Ed played 12 seasons in the NBA, and he played for the LA Lakers during the time that I was the head strength coach there. He was a frequent flyer in the weight room, so we had plenty of time to work hard and create a bond together. In this episode, Ed shares how his dad, who also played in the NBA, instilled discipline in him early on. He talks about how his mom poured into him by allowing him to prioritize the game that he loves. He gets into what he learned from the legendary coach Roy Williams at North Carolina, and then he uncovers the realities that he was faced with once he achieved the lifelong dream that he had of making it to the NBA. Let's get into the conversation. Ed, you and I had a chance to be in the tunnel together, the NBA tunnel together with the Lakers, but I look back and I realize I never really got a chance to understand how it all started for you and where the connection to the game came and for you and what that sort of upbringing was within and around the game. Can you tag us in on and catch us up to speed on where that came about and also what it was like coming up in a family where your dad played in the NBA, what that was like?
Right. So, my dad, he put a ball in my hand at a young age, obviously, probably 3 or 4 years old. But my dad didn't start to work me out until I got into high school. Like, wow. He didn't talk about basketball. We didn't go to the gym. We didn't do nothing like really basketball. It was like the most like basic as you can be. But like once I got to like that eighth grade summer, ninth grade, like he just hit a switch and like it started from, cause I lived with my mom growing up, but my dad, we lived in the same city. So he only lived 20 minutes away. So I see my dad every day. So he used to come in the summertime that summer. He was coming to pick me up. He was like, all right, I'll text you. I'll be there at 7 a.m. And literally like every day he was there at 6:55. And then, like, I was young, and I was still, like, you know, up with my boys. We up all night. Like, you know right. how that goes. Stand up 2, 3 in the morning. So, like, when I heard his shucker, he blew the horn. Like, I was like, oh, shit, time to get ready. So, I say that, like, that's what really taught me, like my discipline. Like, you know, like, I didn't understand that at the time. And I was like, why we got to work out so early? Why, like, what's the point? Like, let's work out at noon. Like, you know, but, you know, he was obviously putting something in me that I didn't know. And, you know, that's where work ethic and all that stuff, you know, stuff starts, you know, it starts at a certain place. So he started, started working out, you know, weight room, track, you know, running 3 miles every other day in the weight room. And my dad, he's super old school. So in the weight room, everything is 3 sets of 10, you know, you go up 40, 50, 60 on everything. You know? It's funny, but like, that's him. And like, my dad's strong as hell, but you know, he's country. So, you know, we did that for 4 years, same workout every day, shoulders, back or whatever. not too much lower body. He didn't really believe in like squatting, putting bars on your back, you know, cause he dealt with some back stuff. So it was just pretty much a lot of upper body, whatever, which, you know, that gave me advantage. Cause you know, a lot of guys really don't lift in high school. And so, like I said, you know, he's building that work ethic, you know, for me. And then in like high school, like if anyone like who was around, like they knew, like my dad was loud at the games, like he wanted me to be more aggressive, he wanted me to shoot threes, and like he was like on me. So when I was in the ninth, 10th grade, he worked at, he coached at a school called Virginia Union, where he went to school, Ben Wallace, Shaw's Oakley, or whatever.
Yeah.
And when he was working there, like, I was playing, like, pickup with those guys. And, like, that year, I don't know if it was my ninth grade year or my eighth grade or my seventh grade, one of those years, they won a national championship. And so,
wow.
While I was playing, like while I was like growing up, I'm literally playing with these guys, and like I get like I wasn't getting like the prime runs, but I was getting like the last two or three. But you know, I was gaining confidence, and you know, playing against you know bigger, athletic, you know, guys dunking, like you know, that's a lot for you know the sixth and seventh grade, especially back then. Guys don't really dunk how they're doing now,
right?
So it's a little different now, but you know, like that really like helped me, and it made me like find a finesse game and like half touch and like things like that. And so he forced me to do that. I didn't understand at the time, but you know, once again, like that gave me advantage. And my ninth grade year of high school, in 10th grade, I went to a public school. After that, I transferred to a private school, which we won a state championships junior, senior year, which I didn't really want to do, but you know, my dad at the same time, he was like, yo, this is going to be better for you basketball wise, academically, like whatever. It's just, you know, it's a top school in the area or whatever. So I go there and then, start, you know, the college process, you know, my junior and sophomore and junior year, that's when like everything picked up and, you know, I got ranked, you know, top 10, all that. The schools were calling, and, like, I get my first offer. I think it was, like, my ninth grade, and it was, like, Virginia Tech. And I'm like, man, like, I'll take this offer right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. So he kept going. My dad was always – he always say, like, man, like, out of all the schools, like look at Carolina. Like, and this was before, like, they were really recruiting me because they were going after Al-Farouq Aminu, and they were going after Samardo Samuels. So I wasn't, like, their number one option. But – like, I knew that both of them weren't going there. And then I had a relationship with Al-Farouq. I knew he wasn't going there. So I'm like, man, I can just hold out and I can get this scholarship because that's where I really wanted to go. And then that was a school at the time, you know, they were producing, you know, Marvin Williams, Brandon Wright, like all those bigs who were, you know, similar to me. So when I got that scholarship, I jumped on that and that's that.
Oh man. So, go into where do you think that was calculated on your dad's part where, and was that something he spoke of like, hey, we're not going to touch a ball here. We're not going to, like you said, he didn't really get into the game with you until you kind of hit your freshman year. Was that just sort of like, he wanted you to sort of experience a bunch of stuff and not be sort of burdened by the game early? Was that talked about, or was it just sort of like in his plans and he let you know when it was time?
Yeah, it was in his plans. I think I asked at a young age, and like with my dad's personality, he's like, he's tough. Like, you know what I mean? Like super tough, like old school, like gonna get on you. And then once it's over, like you forget about it. But like on that court, like he's tough. So like I felt like for him, he didn't want to break me down too early and make me like not love the game. So once he's seen like, all right, he loves the game. He has a skill, like, let's go. So I think like for him, it was just, you know, a matter of time. He wanted to make sure that like I was ready because like I said, like his personality is like, he's not really like, I mean, he's military tough, that country military mindset.
Wow. Was it tough? Was there some tough aspects to having a dad that you knew or people around you, friends and peers knew like, oh, your dad played in the NBA. You're supposed to be good, or you're getting this good because of that versus like what you were actually putting the work in to do. Was any of that stuff that you had to go through?
I mean, not really, because everyone who like knew me, like I like literally like lived at the gym, like growing up, like,
yeah,
from sixth grade, like I was at Virginia Union every day in the summertime, seventh grade, every day, eighth grade, every day. So like,
wow.
If you like, I was in the gym, so it wasn't like that. Like, I was never lazy. I never had that.
Right.
I'm just going to show up for the games. Like, I'm working out. I'm trying to get better. Like, I'm hanging out with, you know, college guys, and I'm going through their routines. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, amazing. Take us into a little bit. You know, you just kind of casually mentioned Ben, Big Ben Wallace in passing there, but what did you see in Ben? And you know, was there a link that you could see, you know, to fast forward? And obviously we'll rewind again, but, you know, 1 year in the NBA, I believe you led the league in offensive rebounding rate. So maybe there's a bit of a lineage tracing back to those runs with Big Ben and some of those guys.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one, like my dad was a rebounder, so I guess it's in my blood, you know. And then, so my dad is older than Ben. So like when I was in, you know, the 6th, 7th, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, that's when like Ben was in the prime of his career. And so Ben used to come back to Virginia Union every summer and work out there and, you know, play pickup. And I was involved in those games. And then once like I got older, you know, I started to work out with him here and there, you know, on the court, you know, in the weight room, just cause I mean, he was always around and it was easy, you know, to have access to him. So, you know, I had a couple unique workouts with Ben. We had one workout, man, where we did like 40 med ball dunks. And I'm like, man, this is why you can't shoot free throws. Like literally, like it was like catch the ball at the elbow, one dribble with the med ball, dunk it, go to the other one, catch it, dunk it, go to the 3-point line, dribble, dunk it. Like it was just all med ball. I'm like, man, all we're doing is med ball dunks, man. This is not my game.
I bet you couldn't even move your arms by the end of that.
Man, dead came in my body.
Right? Oh my gosh. Wow. And like, I mean, that's like you said, at his peak of his powers, you were, what'd you say? You were sophomore, junior?
Yep. Yep.
In high school, right? And yep. Like, but like, I'm just trying to think, and you had built up that strength cause you had been in the weight room and stuff, but you know, in those days, you weren't as strong and as sort of grown into your body as you were when we worked together and you're going against Ben Wallace. Like that had to be a lot.
Yeah, for sure. But like for me, like that helped my game because I had to like, I tried to post him up one time. I was posting him at 3-point line. Like, you know what I mean? He's walking out with his hand. So like I had to, it made me like figure out like, all right, how can I score on him? All right.
Wow.
I am a step quicker. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
I am like, you know what I mean? So it just like, it helped me just to, you know, develop like different crafts and like just figure out like how I can like get to I had to beat him to a spot. Like, you know what I mean? To even like get my shot off, let alone like have a, you know, a decent look. So it just like helped me with angles and like, things like that.
Wow. Would your dad, would you and your dad, like, would he trade secrets with you or kind of give you pointers of the game as far as that goes, or just it was more of the put the regiment in place, push you where you need to be pushed, and maybe sometimes too far, maybe, you know, sometimes head to head, but that's how it goes in the fire. Like, was there trade secrets and that, or just like he's pushing you?
Nah, he was I mean, like obviously like when like looking back on it when you're young, it's like, you don't really want to hear it. It's like, oh, here we go again, preaching, like, you know, but like, he's trying to tell me, but when you're young, you think you know everything, you know, that's right. How it is for a lot of young guys, you know? So, I mean, he was telling me everything that was going to come. Like, I thought it was going to be easy. I'm at ninth grade. Yeah. I'm going to get drafted. Like, and he looking at me like, man, it don't work like that, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, he taught me all the steps and like what was coming and, you know, all the hurdles you can go through, even though our path was different because he went to a Division II school.
Yeah.
He wasn't highly recruited, like, you know, so I was obviously, you know, top 10 McDonald's All-American and all that.
Right.
Yeah. Is it true that he used to send you, well, now they would be called like motivational texts or something like that, but just messages to kind of even rile you off a little bit sometimes and get you moving, keep you going?
Yeah, so when we worked out in like the summer times, it was usually Monday through Friday. So like on like Saturday, Sundays, it was pretty much like, all right, you can do whatever you want. So he'll send me a text and be like, man, Greg Monroe is in the gym. Because that's like the guy who was ranked ahead of me. You know, Smarter Samuel is in the gym. Like he would literally like text me stuff like that. And really, like, those guys were probably in the gym. Like, it makes sense. But when you're young, you're like, man, I worked out 5 days. I'm good. But you're 13, 14, you can work out 7 days a week and recover to damn near the same right. every day. Like, you know, so.
Yeah, take us inside a little bit. You mentioned transferring schools, and I'm guessing that, you know, that's hard on anybody, particularly at the time that you did it, where you've already got your friendship group and, you know, you've got your guys, and then suddenly you're going across town to this different school. But at the same time, you know, maybe it ended up, like your dad said, it's a higher level of play. It's a higher standard of academics. So take us inside that a little bit, and the good, the bad, and the ugly at the time.
I mean, it wasn't really like no bad, you know, I can adapt anywhere I go. So like, I never had a problem with, you know, finding my way or fitting in or anything. But the change was I was in a public school and I transferred to an all boys military school.
Whoa.
And so, yeah. So like my personality, like I'm laid back, like to myself in a, you know, so it's like,
yeah,
I'm coming in, I'm a top 10 player. Like I know that, like, you know, in the back of my mind. So I got a senior trying to tell me to do push-ups. I'm like, man, like, that ain't going down. Like, you know what I mean? So I dealt with that. I dealt with that early on. But, you know, after a while when I got there and guys, like, you know, started to, you know, understand and talk to me, you know, they laid off that and it was easy. But, I mean, that was a big change from going from a public school where, you know, you pretty much do whatever you want, like, like, it's not really too many rules, but, you know, at a military school, you got to shave, you got to have your uniform on right, you got to be tucked in, you got to be ironed, you got to, like, just a lot, man, like, and like I said, like, it didn't really fit my personality, but at the same time, like, it taught me, like, discipline, like, it taught me about, you know, be on time with everything, like, because, you know, you got to be at formation at 7:45, you know, I had to take a 25-minute drive there every morning, so, like, it did teach me discipline and, like you said, like being on time, and, you know, it helped me out my whole NBA career. Like, I was never late, like, one time. Right. I never got fined for that. So, like, that saved me a lot of money, you know? So I appreciate it.
Yeah, turned out to be pretty important. I can't wait to go forward into kind of what that recruiting process then, when it really heated up, was like, and then what the first parts of the chapter at UNC was really like it, from your perspective. But I can't help but wonder what you talked about earlier, the idea of early on you were being shown sort of the traditional, some would call it old school, meat and potatoes approach to the weight room. And you had guys like your dad, like Ben Wallace, to show you the way on that. I mean, I didn't know that, but, you know, when we intersected, we always had so many good conversations because it was like, why are people getting too fancy out here rather than just go in and do the work? It's not complicated. But is that something you think back to, is like how you learned how to take care of your body early on and don't overcomplicate it? And how do you see it happening today where sometimes, maybe, as I know we've talked about, people are getting a little too complicated and fancy in the weight room sometimes?
Yeah, so, like, man, you know how much, like, I'm into, like lifting, like,
yeah,
like, I train, you know, I still work out with Jonas at UNC.
Yes, sir.
You know, so it's like, I feel like now, like, everyone's, like, trying to get, like, I don't know, man. Like, I feel like the basic stuff in the weight room that you can do 20 years ago is still, like, the main part of what you need to do now. Like,
right.
Like, just lifting weights. Like, you know what I mean? Like, being consistent. Like, still squatting. Like, obviously, like, if you have some type of, like, weakness, you have to, and it's on, like, the trainer, it's on the you to figure out, like, what works for, like, yeah, that person's body. But, like, doing lunges and doing dips and pull-ups, like, I feel like that's, like that's never, should ever, like, leave a program or any type of, if you're a strength coach for a basketball program, like, that should always be, like, the foundation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, not yoga, not, you know, all the, you know, Pilates and all these, like, all that stuff helps, but, like, all that's, like, those are, like, off-day activities or, like,
yes,
your second workout. Like, you know, it's like those are like bonuses. But like getting in there and really like squatting, like you said, like whatever fits, like whatever. I mean, there's so many different ways you can squat. Like, you know what I mean? So totally. Like, whatever you can do, but like really doing that, like just like you said, like just all like the basic, like I don't know, like that's what I like. And like, that's why I appreciate, you know, Jonas so much. And that's why, like, I had a healthy career and, you know, I'm still continue to play. So I don't know. I feel like you can never go wrong with, you know, the old fashioned, man.
The basics. Well, and I think what you said it perfectly, is those, it's not that what you're saying or anybody's saying, or what I am totally in agreement with you on, is saying that, you know, you don't need yoga. You don't need all the stuff that is evolutions of how the craft has sort of changed and newer stuff. It's just, that can't be the thing. And it has to be sort of the bonuses, and it has to be the stuff that supports the foundational pieces. And I just don't think a lot of people appreciate or recognize how much the body, the wear and tear body goes through of an NBA player from the time that they step into that league. And when they're first stepping into that league, by the way, they, not all of them were banging against Ben Wallace when they were in ninth grade or whatever, like you were. So this is some of the, you know, first time they're really hitting up against grown men in a way. And so to be able to combat that, you have to be able to lift heavy stuff, and you don't always have to overcomplicate it or make the complicated stuff the main event. The word you said though was the key. I'm not here to say, oh, my way, and the stuff that, you know, maybe I do have a little more of a traditional approach at its foundation as well, and probably why we work together well when we did. But it's not that that's the only way or the right way necessarily, but the consistency aspect by you, the player, which I never had any question marks with my team of staff here at TD Athletes Edge. Now we call it your EQA, your earned question mark average. Like a pitcher has an ERA. You want that thing to be 0.00. You don't want your teammates or your coaches or your supervisors wondering, like, are they going to show up? Like, what's their consistency level going to be? Yours was 0.00. And it's not a surprise as to why that paid off for you. It was probably some to do with the stuff you were doing, like the exact application and exercises you were doing or being guided to do. There's a lot more to do with your consistency. So that's a huge credit to you.
Appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
So take us inside the UNC decision a little bit. You know, how did the offer come about? When did that come about? And what were the conversations with your family around that? And, you know, it sounds like your dad had that in mind for a while, but just take us inside that latter stage of the recruiting process, like TD said.
Right. So I pretty much, when I opened my recruiting process, I was like, you know, Big East, ACC. Like, I'm staying on the East Coast. And that's when, you know, obviously the Big East and the ACC was a little different then.
Yeah.
I was pretty much narrowed down to Connecticut, Virginia, and like UNC, even like before like UNC had offered me, like Connecticut had offered me, Virginia had offered me, and like Virginia, like back then it was when Dave Leto was there. So like they were struggling. So they really, like they were, you know, shit, I wish NIL was back then, man.
Well, we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that. I can't wait.
For sure. But you know, I didn't really like Virginia. Like I ain't really like, you know, the direction of the program. Like they were struggling back then, so it wasn't really a school that I was really taking a hard look at. But I knew if I went there, like, you know, I would have started, no question. I would have been the focal point. Like, you know, it'd have been, you know, I'd have probably had a different career, you know. For the better or for the worse, who knows? But it would for sure have been different.
Mm.
And then back then, you know, UConn was one of those schools too where they were throwing out, you know, all those bigs. Like they were coming, you know, back to back to back. So I'm like, man, like,
right?
I want to go to either UConn or UNC. Like I know I have the best chance of making it, you know, to the NBA, because that was my ultimate goal. So I took a visit to UConn, man, and I got there. And it was cows on campus. And I seen that and I was like, that's just not really like that. Nah, that's not me. I don't want to see that every day. And it's cold.
there was cows on campus. You said,
bro, it's literally cows on campus. When we got there, like riding with the coach, and I'm like, where are we at? He's like, yeah, we're on campus. And he made a joke about the cows. And I'm like, yeah, that's not really. So I'm thinking like, yeah, like, and then left there. Like I pretty much like committed there without committing. Like I didn't say I was going, but I like it here. Like I'll go there. And then this one I was there. So obviously like the wow factor, like whatever the presentation. When I got home, I was like, nah, this ain't it. And then
those cows, man, those cows.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Shallow as it is, man.
Hey, everybody's got a line, man. Everybody's got a line.
For sure. A couple months later, UNC offered me, I think Coach Williams, he offered me like on a Saturday. I called him back like Sunday, like I'm going here. Like I didn't even, when he offered me, like, I don't even think, I didn't even like discuss it with anyone. I just, next day I called him back, like I'm coming. Wow. And then, cause like you said, like my whole time, like that was really like where I wanted to go. And that's where, like, you know, it's close to home. It's only 2.5 hour drive from where I was at. Like, it's just the perfect situation. Like, had a chance to win a national title. We did. Like, everything is lined up for me to go there. So that was that. Yep.
Yeah. How much of a factor was Coach Williams in that, and just his reputation at the time, and obviously being a Dean Smith guy and taking over from Dean Smith, and just what was the, did that factor into the process, or was it not until you got there that you're like, okay, this guy's legit?
I think it was more to like when I got there, because you got to think about like when you're getting recruited, like all these coaches are like, they pretty much saying like the same thing in different ways. But one thing that like stood out to me that Coach Williams did when he was recruiting me, like he was like the most like straight up, and he was the realest out of all the coaches, because like he never promised anything. Like he said, man, if you're going to start, you're going to have to earn it. Like if you want to make it to the NBA, like it's on you. Like it was never like, you're going to get this, you're going to get that. It's like, man, we got a good team. Like I feel like you can be a big part of it, but like everything, you're going to have to earn it. And so when he said that, I'm like, man, like if he's telling me that, that means he's telling all the other recruits that, because I'm like, I'm a top 10, I'm a top right. 10 player. Like, you know, so it's like, all right, like, I like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want the challenge. And you got to think about it. When I went for my freshman year, I mean, when I was a senior, going into my freshman year in college, they had Tyler Hansborough, Deion Thompson, where they were all, Deion was a 2-year starter, Tyler Hansborough was a 3-year starter. So the competition was there. Then we had Tyler Zeller, and then Alex Stevenson was there. He transferred. So it's like me picking this school, it's like, all right, you going in straight competition.
Wow.
Like, you know, so that had another thing, because, you know, I embraced it. So that was another reason why I did, you know, choose Carolina.
I love that. I love that you looked at that as a positive. I think a lot of players, they look at that the opposite, is like, well, then let me get to the place where there's less resistance.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I guess, I mean, like obviously you said we're going to talk about the NIL, but like times are changing, man. Like,
well, get into it, because that's what I'm fascinated, because you have such a perfect timeline of like exactly where you came up through that wasn't, it was looming. We didn't even know it, but you experienced it without. And then you also, there's the other side that you experienced somewhat without, is like the whole like mixtape piece of what kids now can make themselves through social media, or what they, the pressure gets put on them. So there's sort of two pieces there, but touch on the NIL stuff first. Cause I mean, what would picture, put yourself in there. Tell us kind of like your, what you experience now, what it is, and how you might see things, or if you think it's good or bad.
I honestly, like, I think it's a good thing, you know, especially like,
And sorry, Ed. So real quick, if any listeners didn't know what NIL, name, image, and likeness, and then can you touch on it a little bit, just like what it means now, like for a kid, like what that does for them, what they have the opportunities to do?
So pretty much the NIL is for, if you're a college athlete, you can pretty much make money off your name.
Yeah.
You know, for example, you can go to Applebee's and have an autograph session and charge $20 a paper to sign your autograph, not the school's, your name. You can make money off of it. That's what the NIL is in, you know, a grand scheme of things. But
yeah, perfect. Yeah.
That's what it intended to be, in a sense. Like, obviously, you know, you got some schools that are some sketchy stuff going on, man. That's not really adding up. Like, you know, but
as is always the case, right? People push the limits and the boundaries, and it gets dicey when you do it. Do you look at it as, you made a comment earlier, like, hey, I would have been out there. I would have been able to, do you remember I guess where I'm getting at is, do you remember looking back being like, this is some bull, man. Like, they're making all this money off of us, this NCAA and the college and everybody else. And why aren't we, like, did that cross your mind at the time, or it wasn't really what you were focused on? What was that?
No, I wasn't really like focused on it, but like, I was just like, I used to always man, this cafeteria food, this is not good food. Like, why do we eat this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we going to these arenas, like, we packing this arena out. Like, why are we eating this? Like, you know what I mean? Why doesn't like this player who has to go to school like everyone else and work this job, because he has to, you know, be at practice, go to weight sessions, it's everything that comes of being, you know, a college athlete, you know, as a basketball player. Like, it's a lot of things. Like, it's checklist stuff you have to do, like, on a daily. Like, you know, you gotta go to study hall, you gotta do this. Like, it's a job. Like, you know, it's a lot of work. You put a lot of hours in. I'll give you an example for me. So I had $1,200 in my bank account when I was in school. And I was like, man, like, I'm doing it. But I didn't really know any better.
Right.
And like, that was when I first got there. But then when I started to realize, because really, like, when you're college, like, your first time where you have to, like, you know, manage money on your own for the most part, you know, if you weren't taught that at a young age, you know? So it was my first time really, like, understanding and, you know, having a, you know, buy things and groceries and things like that. And I'm like, I'm looking around at, you know, some other people. I'm like, man, like, these guys struggling. This guy ain't got a car. This guy can't do nothing, but he has to go to practice. Like, it's not adding up. But like, this school is making so much money. Like, where is this money going?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, why? Like, I always thought, like, why, you know, this lineman on this football team who started for 4 years, he's not going to make it to the NFL. But shit, when he leaves college, like, he doesn't even have healthcare. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he has, like, nothing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the very basic, not, I'm not saying, like, all right, he has $100,000, but, like, man, like, this guy's coming out there with CTE. Like, you know what I mean? A lot of people don't talk about it, but this stuff is real. Like, these guys, like, you know what I mean? Like, now it's like from football. So I'm looking at it like, and like, you go to the football games, you know how crazy the games be. 50, 60, 70, 100,000 people there. So I'm like, man, like, this ain't really like adding up. Like, you know what I mean? Guy, his first year out of college, you know, with a degree, and he's the bouncer at the local club, you know, because his head is so thrown off. Like, you know, so.
It's just, what he sacrificed. What he sacrificed. Sure. And what they. All that money came in for was him.
Yeah, and where did that money go to? The school endowment or what?
Right.
Support the swimming program that, like, you know what I mean? It don't make sense. Like, you know what I mean? So, it definitely rubbed me the wrong way. And
interesting.
I'm for the NIL in every way. Like, even the schools that are being sketchy, I'm glad, you know, that the players are getting in and not, you know, the random, I don't know, athletic director or, you know, somebody that's following the money somewhere. Like, that money's going somewhere. Like, you best
believe,
you know. So I'm all for it, man.
No, that's amazing. And that, hearing your take on it, that's such a good point is, you know, at least now they can eat what they kill. And hey, if you want to double down on it and be all in on that as an individual, go for it. Set up 10 of those Applebee's card signings, whatever you want to do. Like, it, you know, with anything, you're going to have is you're going to have people that push boundaries, people that kind of go outside the buoys a little bit. That's going to be with anything. Now it's there. Now what they have to do is I think just figure out it's in such the early stages that it just is like figuring out what the loopholes could be and what that kind of thing. But how can it not be good at the core of it to be able to have those athletes have the opportunity to who are making that money? For the school, for the team, for everybody around it, not be able to tap into what it is the end users, the people paying the money, want anyways, is to have access to and be around and get exposed to those players. So how can it not be good? What about on a sort of similar track, but a new evolution that didn't exist, the transfer portal? What do you think on that?
No, I love the transfer portal over the NIL. Like, if I had to pick which
really?
State, like, yeah, really? I do. I really do. From like so many different like factors. Like, you got a lot of kids who get, you know, under recruited, yeah. Like, you know, just because like the situation they're in, and then, you know, vice versa. You got these guys who are going to these schools, and you got this coach promising them this, and then when they get there, it's different. And so you like, all right, coach said I'm playing 20 minutes because I asked him and he promised me this. And then I'm playing 6 minutes. And so now I'm stuck. And now he recruited over me. So now I can't play. And, you know, back then you had to sit out, you know, like a year. Like,
right.
Like, you know, they're doing weird stuff. Like, sometimes you weren't even like clearing people. Like, it's all like, yeah, but like, and then I don't like how, you know, before the transfer portal, you know, a coach, he can get fired or, you know, take a buyout and go to a new school and he can coach immediately, leave all the guys that he recruited there with a whole new staff that's coming in. And that whole new staff, I don't like this player. I don't like this player. I don't like this player. And now like these kids, like their whole, you know, college career is sort of messed up.
Totally.
You know, and from being a doghouse from the coach that never liked them or getting recruited over this. I mean, it's so many different things. So like, I love the transfer portal. It just changed that really changed like college basketball because, you know, if you're a good recruiter and a good coach, like you could turn a program around in a year.
Right. That's a good point.
You know, which it took, you know, sometimes like 3-4 years to get the recruits in just to start playing well. But if you do your due diligence, and you start looking at some of these mid-majors and you snatch some of these guys up that, you know, that can really play, that is not like, you know, that is not, you know, they don't have the name or whatever. Like, you can really change some things around, man.
That's a good point.
You can see it at some of the schools like Pittsburgh. I mean, they did it.
Right.
On a low level. Like, you know, they did it, though. They got a lot of transfers there, man.
Totally.
NC State did it too. They got some transfers that's really playing well, and you know those teams, they got a good chance of making the tournament.
Wow, fascinating.
Yeah, take us back inside your own experience, where as you mentioned earlier, some guys had been established, and there wasn't the frequent transfer. And as you said, there were some problems where your classes won't carry over, and so guys would be discouraged or whatever reasons it might be, or you had to redshirt for a year. But you mentioned that Hansborough, you know, been there for 3 years and was obviously at the level that he was at, and then some of the other guys on that pretty stacked line, and then you come in. So what does it look like? You know, you welcome the challenge, as you told us, you thought that Coach Williams could develop you. So take us inside those early runs on campus, you know, maybe preseason and that first few weeks around Coach Williams, and just kind of put us back in that picture with you.
Right. So when you first get to Carolina, you know, you go to summer school, whatever. And back then, you know, 08, 09, like all the pros used to come back. So like our pickups were like super intense. Like if you were a freshman back then, like you might only play like maybe one or two games. Like, cause it was times where it was 10 pros on the court.
Like who? Like who's coming back?
I mean, everyone, you know, Vince Carter, she, you know, Twan, literally everyone, Brandon Wright, like all the guys. Like, so like, and then you had, you know, guys coming from, you know, Duke, NC State or local guys or whatever. So like, it was, it was great run. Like Carolina was known, you know, back then for their pickup.
Wow.
So when I got there, one thing I noticed when I looked at our team, I was like, there's nobody really on this team super athletic in the post but me. Wow. You know, because we had Deion, who was more of a jump shooter. You had Tyler, who was more back to the basket. Tyler Zeller, you know, he was sort of athletic, but it was sort of different because he shot, you know, he wanted to shoot the three. And
yeah.
It was just like we just had different games. I was more, you know, defense-minded than he was. So I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to play because for the simple fact I can catch a lob, I can dunk, I can block shots, and these guys can't. So I had that in the back of my mind. I was like, all right. Like, I'm cool. I feel good, like, where I'm at. So, like you said, like, with the competition, like, I was cool with it. And then, you know, early on, I had a conversation with Coach Williams, and, you know, he literally told me, he said, Eddie, you rebound and block shots, you know, you'll go to the NBA, you'll make a lot of money. Literally told me that. Rebound, block shot.
When you were a freshman, he said that?
When I was a freshman. I'm like, all right, cool. You know,
enough said, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to think too. Like he was like he been putting out pros, so he knows. Like he knows what's going on. It's not like it's a random, you know, Seth Greenberg at Virginia Tech where they don't have nobody. You know, so like
talk to him.
I was like, all right, man, that's all I want. Like, one, like, this was his first time sent, like, talking about NBA to me. So once he said that, I was like, all right, I like that talk. Cause that, like, I wanted to win the championship. Like, obviously, everybody wants to do, but my main goal was making it to the NBA. Like, that was my main goal.
Yeah.
So that really helped me. And, like, it just taught me, you know, just, you know, be patient, you know, because, you know, he used to always tell me, you know, You can play more minutes, but, you know, we have to keep the team going and certain guys with certain, like, you know, he just had a way of, he knew that if you play certain guys, you can lose certain guys in a sense. Like, you know, if you bench this guy, like, I'd rather have both of y'all instead of one of y'all. And like, Coach Williams, like, he knew that, like, he knew how to manage that, the egos, like all that, like everyone always gets along, like he's good with that. So that helped out a lot for sure.
Amazing. I love that. I mean, that's what a sign of a great leader in Coach Williams is, that ability to not only, I mean, you knew that that was the objective to get to the NBA, but you, as you just said, like that was the first time he started saying that to you. And then, so he validates your objective. It can be real. And then not only that, so, you know, he's showing you what you can do and validating, proving to you, yeah, you can do that, even if you're not quite 100% certain, as I'm sure you were, but just really validates it. Then he tells you, here's the blueprint, defense, rebound, run the floor, right? So you walk away from that conversation. Obviously, it stuck with you because you bring it up now, and it's like, wow, that's powerful.
Yeah, no, like you said, like for sure, like you said, like I literally walked out of here. I was like, man, that's all I got to do. Like,
wow.
Ooh, like I really, that's what was on my mind. Like, because obviously he's seen the talent. Like he knows what NBA teams want. Like, you know, so.
Sorry to cut you off, but again, credit to you. I mean, that's like, there's a lot of players and I've been around them. So I'm not just guessing here, that would have heard that, be like, yeah, but I want to be the guy getting 21 a game. I want to be the guy getting the shots. I want to be the guy that's not catching the lob. I want you to run the play for me and that kind of thing. And I mean, it is a perfect combination of the right leader saying the right stuff, putting the right stuff in front of you. But you had to be open for that. So that's huge.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like always been like a team player. So like fitting in roles was like never like hard for me. Even though coming into that situation, like I was like a McDonald's All-American. I was a top 10 player, but like I always been like a team player. And I always knew in the back of my mind that when you win, good things always happens. And on every level, it always happens. Like in the NBA, when you win, majority of the guys on the team get paid.
When you Everybody lose, eats.
It goes crazy. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just not for the players, it's for everyone on staff, like everyone from the front office to the coaching staff to management, everybody, you get taken care of when you win. When you lose, like you don't know what's going to happen. Like, some people, yeah, for sure, going to get paid. Some people are going to have their jobs. Some people get taken care of. But a lot of people that get, you know, replaced and lost in the sauce.
Well, you're one of the most observant players. Like, you're always thinking. I loved our conversations from it, and I love picking your brain about it. So that did you is that just you that looked around, saw that, recognized that way before you probably ever got to UNC, or was that dad pop sort of inserting that seed, like, hey, you know, or was that just you?
It's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like you said, like my dad, he always, you know, told me. You know, taught me all the ins and outs and what to expect from, I mean, just like little things from, you know, dealing with the agent, like, you know what I mean? Like things like that, if you've never been in that situation, like, you don't know, like, you know, like a parent can't tell a kid like, or give him advice that really means anything if you've never been in that. Like, yeah, you can say stuff, but like, how do you know if you didn't, you know, you never walked in those shoes, and he walked in those shoes. So like, obviously, like, he taught me so much stuff that I had advantage over from the average kid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. How about mom? What kinds of things did she seeds did she plant, or what'd you take from her that helped to create what we now know?
Yeah, she was the best, from the simple fact that when I got home from school, if I wanted to play basketball for doing my homework, she would let me play basketball. So
she would, or wouldn't, or wouldn't?
She would 100%.
She would.
Like, basketball came first and growing up.
I love
and
that.
For me, like, obviously it worked out and it, you know, paid off, you know, dividends, but like, obviously some people it don't.
But, right.
Right. But like you said, like, your parents obviously have a lot to do, you know, like with your success, you know, a lot, like on, you know, every level, not just like professional sports, you know, just how your parents can help you. Your parents can bring you down. Like, you know,
Yeah.
But so like you said, like with my mom, like she always let me put like sports first. She knew how much like I loved it and like how invested I was. And so I look at it, if she made me just say, do my homework before and not get that extra hour in every day, like who knows like how like my career would have turned out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who knows if like, so all that plays a part. So like, just her like doing that just, you know, helped my career out like that much. Like, you know, it was always, you know, basketball first. Like, AU came before going to school on Friday.
Wow.
You know, so all those.
But she got it. She got it. She, yeah.
Yeah. And every parent's not like that.
Right. 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 Yeah. And yeah, I mean, the other thing too is I have to imagine she knew that this was something that to sort of water this plant in you, she could see what was in front of her too. It wasn't her first rodeo, understanding like you had some real potential and ability to be able to kind of cultivate and get that and put you in a spot where we had Henry Barrera on. Henry is now with University of Alabama and as strength coach and performance coach with their basketball team. And Henry said it. He was like, when your kid finds an interest in something, you back up the truck and you just pour it out onto them. You know, and it sounds like that's what your mom did.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
That's amazing.
Well, that's really great. So, you know, you sacrifice a starting role at a different school, you know, maybe playing as many minutes as you want to play, taking as many shots as you want to take for this different role at Carolina. And the team goes on a run your freshman year. Can you take us inside the tournament that freshman season?
Yeah, so like me being so like young and like not knowing, because, you know, those guys on that team, you know, they lost in the Final Four year before. So like they knew how hard it was and how tough it is. So like me and, you know, all other freshmen, we were just like, man, like we supposed to win the championship. If we were ranked number one preseason, yeah, four losses, and then one of the loss like tied in play, and one Tyrese Rice went crazy. So we were the best team in college basketball that year by far. So like every game in that tournament, I think we won by double digits. Like, it was literally not one close game. The only close game was, I think it was LSU gave us a little run with like 10 minutes to go, where it was maybe like a 3 or 4 possession game. But everything else, like, game was over at halftime. So it was, for me, it was just, it was sweet. Like, I didn't, I was like, man, we supposed to win it, and we did. And, like, you know, it wasn't really, like, it meant, back then, it meant more for those guys than it did for me.
Mm.
Obviously, like, now looking back on it, like, I cherish it more. But back then, like I say, it was just so, it was so easy, and we were so dominant. It was just, man, we supposed to win it. No question we're going to win it. But those guys on the team, you know, they've been through the fire because they had lost.
Wow. Amazing. So there's maybe a choice to be made at the end of your freshman year. You know, do you try to make the jump to the league? Do you come back to school? And you decide to come back, and it looks like the team's rolling again until this rival game against Duke. And then you go down and you end up with this fractured wrist. Can you take us inside that a little bit? And did that make you doubt your decision to come back for that second year? Just take us inside that headspace at that moment. You know, maybe the highs before that, going into that game. Obviously, it's your big rival, one of the biggest rivalries in college basketball, and then this injury happens.
Right. So right after we won the national championship game my freshman year, we're sitting in the locker room. I'm sitting by Wayne, Ty, and Danny. We're all, like, right by each other, and we're talking. And we already did media, and I was like, yeah, I'm going back to school. And they looked at me like, what? Like, no, nah, you need to get out of here. They all, like, literally looked at me like, nah, like, it's time for you to go. But, like, I always had in my mind that I was going to do 2 years and then, like, I was going to leave. So, like, that was in my mind, and I didn't even think about, like, after we won that, man, I got a chance to be a, you know, top 10 pick. It was ours. I'm going to do my 2 years, and then I'm leaving no matter what. So, go back for my sophomore year. Season is going so-so. You know, we got some good wins or whatever, right on that line where, all right, either we're going to go on a run and, you know, get a good seed, or it can get a little shaky. So that Duke game come, I break my wrist, I'm out for the year, and the team, like, everything, you know, starts to go downhill. We go to NIT, whatever. So I'm in the cast, and in my mind, like, I was 100%, like, I'm going back to school. Like, my dad called me, I'm going back to school. Like, I don't care what they say about this. My wrist is no question. Like, I'm out of here. Like, so I get in the cast. A month or two goes by. Get another x-ray. They're like, it's no healing.
Mm.
Like, what? Or they're like, it's very, very small healing. Like, I fractured my lunate bone.
Mm.
In my wrist. I'm like, what do you mean no healing? It's crazy, right? After 2 months.
Oh.
Like, all right. And so I had to, like, make my decision right there. I'm like, man, like, before I broke my wrist, before I even knew it wasn't healing, like, I knew I was out, and, like, I kept going with that, like, I'm leaving, like.
Oh, wow.
I might not have a wrist no more, but I'm not, like, my time is up here. So, like you said, like, I had to make my decision off that. Like, oh, based off that, it was... So I made a decision, boom, see some other doctors or whatever. It starts healing. All right, cool. And that's when the whole draft process starts.
But man,
like I said, I was up back against the wall with, you know, not knowing with the healing thing and having to explain that to teams and all that. So that was a tough decision, but I was out,
man. That does get tough. So what was the healing like, and when did the cast come off comparative to, were you able to do workouts?
So, so the cast, this was like 13 years ago.
I'm making you go back in the bag.
All right. So the cast came off like late May. I'm with Rob Palinka as my agent. So I'm in LA. Cast come off. I'm working with a guy, you know, Barron's Bados.
Right.
Kobe's guy.
Yeah, Kobe's right? Guy. Yep.
So literally, he's working on my wrist. He do a week of working on my wrist. No rehab, no nothing. Like, he gets me where I can shoot the ball. Like,
wow.
Literally, like no weights, no nothing. He just...
Manual.
Digging me every day, like 2 hours a day. Like, you know, he got some stuff with him. He can... he does, so...
Yeah.
Hey, bro, he literally got me right, and in a week, I start shooting, and then the doctor said, like, you're not going to be clear for contact to, like, July 1, but you can do individual. So I had all my draft workouts for like 1 week. So it was like the week before the draft, I had Detroit, Clippers, Utah, and Indiana. Like I went from LA to Utah to Indiana to Detroit, like literally like that. And from Detroit, I went to the draft.
Wow.
So it was back to back to back, and shit, none of them teams picked me. Wasting my time.
What about on the court? Was that a seamless transition for you? I mean, did you kind of slide in and it kind of went as you expected or smoothly, or how did that go for you?
Nah, so it didn't. So when the day, like 2 days before training camp, it's me, Sonny Weems, DeMar, Joey Dorsey. So one of them say like, all right, we're going to go play pickup at some random gym in Mississauga. Playing pickup, boom. I tore my meniscus. This is like 2 days before training camp. I'm like,
what?
Man. Bro, this is after I just fractured my wrist. And me, when I fractured my wrist, that was the first time I ever like missed a game. Like, injury period. So right before training camp, it's my knee. I'm like, man. So I have surgery on that. And so I'm out like the first like 2 months. So, you know, back then, like how they do, you know, recovery and, you know, coming back from injury is a lot different. Like,
yeah.
You know, like yeah. It wasn't though, you know, play 1-on-1 and then 3-on-3 and then 5-on-5 and whatever. Like I'm coming back from my injury. Like, all right, you good now? You going to the G League. I mean, the D League. So it's
going to
be Erie.
Oh, my. To Erie, Pennsylvania, the Bayhawks.
Yes, bro. Yes.
My God.
Toronto to Erie. Like, come on.
Oh, my God.
So I get, you know, enough where I can move on the court. They send me down there. And that was a big reality check for me. It was very humbling, you know, especially coming from Carolina, you know.
It's
a certain standard when you're at Carolina, you know, you travel, you know, you're on the private planes, you know, you stay at the best hotels, you eating Ruth Chris after every game, like,
right.
You
know,
they treat you well. And so we get
there's not even a Ruth Chris in a D League city, let alone go there.
Exactly. So I get to the D League and they send me down there with Johnny Lee, who the strength coach in Toronto.
Johnny Lee, baby.
Johnny Lee, my guy. So we get down there, and first game, Reggie break his foot. So I'm like, oh, shit. One, I'm out of here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as messed up as it sounds, but, you know, that's how the NBA works. Like, you know.
Right.
Like, always one injury away. So I'm like, all right, I played two games. I'm going to play two games, and I'm gone. Like, it was my eight. Rob called and told me that. Like, it was understood. So, like, my time in the G League wasn't good. Like, one, like, we got our uniforms on, like, socks was wet. I'm like, man, what is this? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
that wouldn't have happened. That wouldn't have happened when you were doing laundry TV. No, everyone had nice warm socks, right?
The socks would have been worn, but there might have been wrinkles in those jerseys. I wasn't going to iron anything out, I'll tell you that much.
Right. So, bro, like, the socks are wet, and, like, I'm like, man, like, I'm literally like, man, like, I'm asking people, like, can I get some, like, some new socks? And they look at me like, man, this is what it is. Like, you know, back then in the D-League, like, the trainer did everything, damn near.
Yes,
like,
sir.
Trainer was massage, you going to drive the bus, fly the plane, like.
Totally.
Like, trainers. So, like, my time didn't really. It didn't really, you know, I was, like I said, I was young and a little more a little immature back then. So it was good. I got out of there quick. And, you know, I got back first game versus the Wizards. I had like 11-6. So I was like, all right, like they're going to play me. So I had a solid first year, man.
Wow. Wow.
So you talked about a vet that helped you in Reggie Evans. Talk a little bit about DeMar and some of the younger guys that you were coming up with at that time.
Yeah. So I met DeMar. I think it was either like my 9th or 10th grade year at LeBron's camp and like some more camps or whatever. And so we had like a relationship. So DeMar got drafted in 2009, the year before me. So like once I get drafted, it was like we was hanging out every day. Like, I'm at his place, he at my place. Like, he's showing me the ropes. Like, when the season was over with, I'm in LA, I'm staying with him. Like, so, like, we developed a, you know, hell of a lifelong, you know,
bond,
you know, relation. Yeah, bond that's like beyond basketball. Like, we don't even like talk about basketball or anything. Like, it's
wow,
it's like past that. I'm the goddad of, you know, his oldest daughter. So,
wow,
yeah, we got a good relationship, man.
That's special. That's special. Brother, I mean, life. Yeah, I mean, and I have to imagine having that has to, I mean, going through that and as we talked about, kind of get hit in the face with all this adult stuff and real life NBA stuff, it, having somebody that's going through it with you and trying to navigate it, figure it out, it's power in numbers, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like you said, like, for me, like most people, like when they think of like Toronto, you don't really look at it as like you're in a different country. Like, you know what I mean? You can get to it like with so much like easy access, but like a lot of guys up there, you get homesick. Like, you know, yeah, what I mean? Being like in Toronto, like it don't really get talked about a lot, but like guys do. So like him being there, like helped me out a lot. Cause we were so close and, you know, we're at dinner every night and
wow,
I'm at his place or, you know, chilling with his cousins there at my spot, like this, however it might be. So like that, like having him there, like helped me out a lot. Just like, you know what I mean? Like I said, like, people don't really look at it, but like you get homesick playing in Toronto for sure.
That's a good point. I didn't look at it through that perspective before, but it is true, right? I mean, everything, you don't get in and out of that. I mean, you got to go through customs. So you don't just make a quick trip anywhere. I mean, it's like, and then also look, I mean, yeah, it is relatively close on a map, but it is a different culture. It's a different way. It's different. And there's the, I mean, everything, the currency, I mean, how everything operates, how things go, all those little things. So not only are you, I never did think about this. Like, not only are you leveling up, learning the NBA ropes, but you're learning them in a totally almost a different environment than every other NBA city.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like I said, it opened my eyes up to a, you know, like I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, bro. Like,
yeah,
if you know anything about Richmond, it's white, black, and that's pretty much it. But a lot of stuff, like, I wasn't, like educated on, like, you know what I mean? Just, like different cultures, and because, you know, you don't experience that in Richmond.
Right.
So going to Toronto really, like, opened my eyes up to so much stuff. For the simple fact, I'm in a different country, and half the guys on the team were all from like different countries. We had, you know,
yeah,
Jose from Spain, Andrea from Italy, Leandro from Brazil.
Right.
We had Michael Peaches from, I think he's from France. Alexis Ajinxa from France. David Anderson, he was from Australia. Jamal McGlure, he was from Canada.
Yeah.
And then there was a Linus Klaza, he was from Lithuania. So like,
oh wow,
I'm meeting these guys, and they like they teach me different things like about their culture also. So like you said, like it opened my eyes like to a lot of stuff, like, you know, for the simple fact of like, you know, trying like new foods, like, you know what I mean,
right?
Like, because you're part of different cultures, you're going to a Spanish restaurant or you're going to a Brazilian restaurant or
wow,
a real authentic Italian restaurant, you know. So
right,
that opened my eyes up a lot.
Yeah, and that's true. I'm not only on the team, as I didn't think about that part either, but the city itself, if there's any NBA city that is a true kind of melting pot of many different people from different places and cultures, then, I mean, Toronto is like a baby New York, you know, and there's a lot of different parts, like you said, not quite the same as Richmond.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the team's fortunes at that time, because obviously when a player like Chris that's been the face of the franchise for a number of years and is a bona fide all-star and, you know, is playing international tournaments in the summer, someone of that magnitude leaves, even with some talented young guys like yourself and DeMar coming up, and as you mentioned, this great crop of international players, you know, the team's fortunes changed a little bit. So talk about just the learning curve that first year and, you know, going from a lot of success and winning in high school and Carolina to sometimes those L's piling up a little bit.
Yeah, see, so interesting thing about the NBA. When you're a young guy, like trying to prove yourself, you sort of want to be on those losing teams because you get the opportunity to play. If you go to like those winning teams, like it's only so many minutes available. But on a losing team, like the last 15 games, like the starters are not even playing. Like they didn't, you know, meld it in. Like season over with. Like it's tank time. So like for me, I was like, man, we losing. I'm gonna get to play. So I was like, I was cool with it. Like Chris Bosh leaving, cool. Like I'm about to play my, you know what I mean, my rookie year, cool. So like you said, like we won, I don't know how many games we won. We were trash though. my rookie year, maybe 20 games, and I played, and you know that helped me get, you know, like that's like I feel like those are like that's how you like you stick around the league, like just getting the opportunity to play. It's like I have a big game against this team, so now this coach, like, you know, he knows, like I gave them 15 rebounds or he can rebound, so you know he might look for me in the trade or when I'm a free agent, like, you know. So I appreciated, you know, getting drafted to Toronto and us being bad and, you know, getting the opportunity to play for sure.
Well, that's huge though. Being able to look at it from that perspective rather than complain about it, be, you know, caught up in it. And like you said, losing in an NBA locker room, things get wacky real fast and things go bad real fast. But being able to say, stay out of that fray and just be like, hey, this is your resourcefulness and your ability to see the opportunity in and around the wackiness, it paid off. Ed, what do you think, sort of riffing a little bit off of what Austin Rivers went off on recently of like that mixtape player now today and kind of the aspect of it's just different from when you came up through to now. Can you dive in on that a little bit and kind of some of the, I'm just curious your take on some of the loss of touch with reality or loss of touch with the joy of the game and kind of what we're all really out here to do for that kind of thing. Do you see any of that or do you feel like I'm off base or the topic's off base?
I won't say the loss of joy, but I think like the athletes like are coming up. They're more into like what the game can do for you more than like, like literally, like, man, I just want to get better and I just want to make it to the NBA. Like, I didn't sit and I didn't like watch podcasts and interviews of like high school players talk about like, yeah, like I'm gonna be the first like billionaire player. I'm like, man, like when I was in high school, like I never even like I wasn't even thinking like that. I was just like, man, I'm trying to like have a 10-year career. Like,
right.
I'm trying to like, I want to be an all-star. Like, that's how I was thinking. Like,
right.
I feel like these guys, these young kids have so much like access to stuff and they see so much. Like when I was growing up, like I didn't like see some of the stuff. We didn't have like Instagram when I was in ninth grade. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? So like I wasn't exposed to a lot of things that these young kids are getting exposed to, you know? Yeah. So like I can see like where they're coming from and why like everyone feels they need a mixtape, because you can have a mixtape and get a scholarship. Off a mixtape, like it happens. So like why wouldn't you get a mixtape? Like, you know what I mean? Like you can get this mixtape and you can blow up, so why wouldn't you do that? Like, you
right.
know what I mean? Like it makes sense, like when you like take a deep dive and look at it from that perspective. But like you said, like I feel like now it's like, man, like I gotta look a certain way to go to the gym. Like I just can't go to the gym, like, you know what
right,
I mean?
It's so much. Right.
So, like, you know what I mean? Like I never care like what I had on going to the gym. I was trying to get there, like, you
get
know,
the work so. In Yeah.
Probably well, a little different.
Yeah, exactly. And for any listeners that term is obviously the N1 mixtapes is not really what we're talking about here. We're talking about the glorified, overdone highlight reel that I think sometimes, as I see it anyways, you have the 11th, 12th person on the bench has a mixtape. And it's like, that wasn't an option back then. First of all, the social media, everything else to put it all together wasn't really an option. But now to your point, you're getting people making decisions off of offering scholarships off of this. Anybody can make a highlight tape. If you're getting out there and get some reps in, you're going to have some good reps and you're going to have some good shots. You're going to have some good plays. I think it just gets, it gets tricky. And to get, this is just me on a soapbox, but it just, like you said, I mean, you were always it was in you from the get-go of, yeah, you knew the game could do some stuff for you, but you did it in a way of, it wasn't like, but what can the game do for me? You were in it like, hey, this is a team game. I'm in it. And if we all win, we all eat more. And so, you know, you're going to find your opportunities, that kind of thing. I think it gets really hard, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's the environment they're in. It gets really cloudy when you're seeing all this stuff that, oh, this person got that through the mixtape. I got to create mine better, get mine more, get this person to this person. I got to pay these people to make mine this way or whatever. My parents are paying for this, and having these people come to my game to make the mixtape for us, all this stuff. It's a, there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than it ever was when you went up and came up through. And so I think there's some good from it. And I'm sure there are cases that you could go back and look and say, hey, this helped this person get to a spot and they took advantage and they wouldn't have had that without their quote unquote mixtape and that kind of thing. But I think there's some slippery parts to that slope as well.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, not to jump on the social media train, but I'm glad that, like, we didn't have all this when I was growing up, because I for sure would have said crazy or whatever. So, like, I give it up to a lot of these players, man, because it's social media, it's tough, man. Like some of these kids, man, they got millions of followers in high school. Like,
right.
Why do you even want that much, like attention? Like, you got a million followers and, like, you're fighting for a scholarship at a low major, like,
right?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, like that, like I wouldn't want that, like, you know, so.
That's a good point. That's a good point, man.
For sure. As in your last couple of years in the league, well, we don't know, you might get a call right now. Your phone could blow up right now and you can get called back. But you know, by the time you got to the Cavs, you were almost in that Reggie Evans like role in a way on that roster. And so, you know, you got some of these young guys like Darius Garland coming in, Evan Mobley coming up with yourself now, maybe a little bit more in Reggie's shoes when you were coming in. What were some of the things you were trying to help some of these younger guys work with? And what were some of the good things that you saw about them?
Yeah. So like, I say like when I got to like year, like seven, like, and I was sort of like, getting to be like the veteran on the team, like I always tried to, you know, give guys advice in every situation that I can possibly help them with that, you know, I experience or I know, or could put them, that person in contact with somebody, you know. And you know, from, you know, being a pro to, you know, financially to, you know, dealing with family to whatever. And like, you know, you talk to guys, you know, the guys that are listening, you know, the guys that don't give a damn. So the ones that don't give a damn, you sort of just gotta let them be. And the ones that listen, you know, you just try to give them as much knowledge and as much information that you can, you know, possibly give them. Because, you know, a lot of these guys, like, they don't really know, like, this, you know, like the business side of it. Like, they just think like, oh, I'm a free agent and my agent said I'm gonna get paid. Like, yeah, he says that, but trust me, it's a lot of guys that don't. So like, these are the things you got to look out for. Like, do you have your bird rights? Like, do you even know what your bird rights are? Like, you know what I mean? So
right.
It's just doing all those like little things and, you know, just preaching in a sense where like it, the people that want to listen, like they're comfortable with it. And it's not like I'm just talking work. I'm giving you real life examples. Like, hey, I've been through this and this is what I dealt with, or I know this player who dealt with this and this would happen. And so many different like scenarios and situations like that. But with that Cavs team, man, they got a lot of potential, man. They got some, Evan Mobley will be a real good player, man.
Man, that's exciting to see how that develops. And you left him with some great model of and I'm sure planted some seeds that will be something we see coming down the line. We have one final question. I'm going to get to it in a second. But you're a father of young ones as I am, similar ages. And, you had an upbringing of how your parents parented you as an athlete and someone that in your case you loved, as a student athlete, but as someone who loves sports. But it's a huge issue in the world and in youth athletics, where how parents are getting carried away and that kind of thing. How what's your approach? How are you going to parent those beautiful kids of yours?
You talking about like athletics
when it comes to sports? Sorry, when it comes, yeah, sorry, yep.
So, like with my twins, the older one, he's into sports and like he always wants to play and super active and like I know that he's going to like he's play soccer. He did well with that. Baseball is at 4 or 5. It's like it's not good. It's just babysitting for 30 minutes. But you know, soccer did well. They do karate, but for them, I will make them do martial arts until they get into 9th grade. And then after that,
wow.
If you know, you want to continue good, if not like whatever.
What's it about that makes you say that? What's it about martial arts?
I mean, I like the discipline one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I like what karate is teaching them. And then obviously I'm going to get them into, you know, get them into some boxing, get them into some, you know, kickboxing and yeah. Like whatever, like, I don't know. I figure I haven't really took a deep dive into it, but it is like, you know, one from the self-defense standpoint too.
And, yeah.
And so, but with sports, like I said, I have my older one, he's into it. The younger twin, not so much. And me personally, I'm not going to force them to play anything. I sign them up. They'll play once they get into middle school, and after that, they're on. If they want to do it, cool. If not, cool.
So good. That's so good.
Yep.
I think a lot of people could learn from that right there. Don't overcomplicate it and let them kind of shape their way. That's I think beautiful. Final last question. This is the Basketball Strong podcast. You can answer this from more spiritual, emotional. You can answer it more technical, whatever your gut, your heart, your mind says and feels. What does it mean to you, ED, to be basketball strong?
Ooh, good question. To be basketball strong. To me, it's like this. From, let's say from an 18-year-old or in middle school standpoint, I would say, or mindset, it would be just not cheating the game.
Mm.
You know, you basketball strong, just not cheating any, you know, any aspect of it, you know, because, you know, I remember like when I was in playing AAU, you know, coach asked like how many guys got shots up and everybody would be like, oh, I got shots up. But
right,
everybody didn't get shots up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because it's a lot of parts of basketball where you just need a ball. You can go outside, work on your ball handle. You can work on your passing outside. You can work on your cardio. You can work on your quickness. So it's not cheating the grind, man. I feel that's one thing I didn't do my whole career was cheat the grind, man.
No, sir. Talk to him, Phil. Put that one in the vault, baby.
Locked.
So good, man. ED, this was just pure gold. I'm so honored that you would step on with us and just take us through the journey and share some of the lessons. It's just really, really powerful. We sure appreciate you so much.
For sure. Thanks for having me on, bro. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed today's show, and we hope you did, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you listen to podcasts on. And so you never miss a weekly episode, be sure to subscribe and follow. You can find previous episodes on our show website. That's www.basketballstrongpodcast.com. For more basketball performance resources and nagging injury solutions, follow me on Instagram at TDAthletesEdge and follow Phil at Phil White Books. Until next week's episode, stay basketball strong.